do it, you weren't going to get into the LRTP constrained plan. So you didn't choose to do it, you were forced to do it. The other thing is Mr. Templis stated that you're going to be complying with California environmental laws as well as federal laws, except that the governor is proposing legislation to disallow environmental lawsuits, not only for the future, but those already in place. So we have kind of a problem there regarding credibility. The other things you said, that steel on steel is cost effective. Well, it's cheaper to build, but it's much more expensive to maintain than other technologies that are being developed in China, Japan, India, and in England and such. So I guess if when the bond measure was put out there, and if you had said, we have a vision, we want to get from San Francisco to LA as quickly and as environmentally sensitively as possible and in the best possible manner for the public, and kept the technology open, I probably would be right there with you advocating for this. But you didn't do that. You had an out-of-state company who does steel on steel. It's my understanding that they funded the proposition and kind of told, you showed pictures of elderly people, seniors, and children with very clean technology, and you were promising them transportation. That's not what Proposition 1A was. So we're a very small portion of community members here who are extremely concerned about the impact to our community without much benefit. And so you're going to be hearing people here and telling you about how it's going to impact them and their homes. To me, it's like the emperor who wore no clothes. You keep talking all of this bright talk, but the basic impacts are not spoken about very often in an honest and true manner.
I think, Ms. Albright, to paraphrase, maybe what you could address, Councilor McLean brought up EIR losses, the maintenance cost of steel and steel. I think the main one, when we look at the task force that came forward, was the impact of not only the homes that, the 23 homes in the church, but the community at large. So maybe if you could specifically address frequency, noise, sound vibration, view impacts to the school and the community, that might address a lot of questions also. So if you address.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay.
Just go ahead and answer Councilmember McLean's concern, and we'll give the Councilmember Boyson next.
All right, very good. I'll try to do that, and I also ask my team members here if they want to add to that. If I may, let me just add one observation. As I observe over time, the High Speed Rail Authority, there have been significant changes and leadership in an attempt to change the way we behave. And time will tell. But let me just note that with some of our new board members, Dan Richard was mentioned earlier as our chair, our new CEO coming on, Jeff Morales, we are changing the culture of the High Speed Rail Authority and its team to take a look and be more responsive. And I want to just acknowledge right now that this city and many of the folks in this room have spoken numerous times before the board and have not been, the response back has not been very satisfying. And so I do want to, and I hope we get to the place later this afternoon and of course this evening, we talk about what our next steps might be to change and be a little bit more responsive to the needs here. So I'm hoping that you'll notice a change in the way that we're trying to address this. And I think our business plan went a long ways to speak to that. If I may, I'll speak first to the steel on steel discussion. I think what we do is we look at the best in the world that we see right now for this particular distance and this particular travel, and we're very confident that based upon all we see in Europe, what we see in Asia, where we have high-speed rail, this in fact is the best technology for this particular gap in mobility. That everything else right now, if you think in terms of the fact that it will pay for itself in the sense that during the operation and maintenance costs will be covered by the fares. So unlike highways, and unlike a lot of our other transit facilities which take subsidies, this will be the business plan calls for. We will not move forward unless the fact that the initial operating segment shows that it creates a profitable situation. So the maintenance, the energy I've already discussed, in other words, the predictability of this particular technology is proven as being very reliable, very safe, very environmentally clean overall, especially with California's unprecedented commitment to 100% renewable energy. There were a lot of other questions there as far as the environmental impact.
You know what? There's not going to be any discussion from the crowd to the speakers. You'll have the opportunity to be heard.
Mr. Albright, I don't expect you to answer each one thing that I brought up. Those were more statements than they were questions to you.
I do want to be responsive, so let me know what I should speak about.
That's okay. I think, thank you for attempting to answer what I stated, but I think what we need to do is kind of get on with it right now.
I think before the public comment, I do think, though, reading the task force letter that I have here, I do think we need to address this so they're aware, so we have good facts going in, frequency, noise, or, like for me coming in and hearing that from the outside, is that the expectation of what it would sound like?
Well,
the school? I don't know.
Yeah, I asked my team who have first-hand experience, and they started first asking, how is this calibrated, because it sounds loud. It's not what we would expect. If we were thinking in terms of where this is a great opportunity to try and explore this idea, but sound is very sophisticated. And as best this team did that brought in the sound, it kind of was surprising to the folks that have hands-on experience with this around the world. So this sounds really loud. But it does sound like it is electric train. We can tell that this is a high-speed electric train. It doesn't sound like it's traveling very fast because of duration, but it's clearly high-speed rail. This recording was taken somewhere close to it because it's not like these are silent. They do create a sound. So in the absence of us providing you something that is documented and well-developed by experts, I have nothing else to say except the observation was, that sounded really loud, and I'd have to agree that that's not what we'd expect. And nor would we put up with that. The idea is that if we're going to be disruptive to a facility like a school, we have to mitigate that sound to a level that is creates a function. So that, I appreciate the work that went into that, but it was a little surprising as far as the outcome of what we're hearing.
I know Councilor Boyce had a question.
Thank you, Mayor Ferry. I wanted to make a couple of quick statements for the benefit of the people that are here as a new council person and not being part of the decision from the prior council to kind of endorse the fact that we would have a corridor through the valley, kind of under the understanding that we would hopefully have some sort of a station here as some sort of a trade-off to benefit the people of Santa Clarita. I did want to say that from everything that I have read and have been reading for years, ever since this bond issue passed, which I personally did not vote for. And what I see from your business plan, which is very suspect, the fact that they say, well, it's too expensive at $98 million. Let's just lop off $30 billion and then increase our ridership and just make it make sense from a business perspective. And everything that we read in the papers from people that are smarter than I and outside sources says that this whole project is a boondoggle and that it cannot pay itself back and the ridership will never pay itself back and that the assumptions that you're using as far as the cost to go up north or down here will not happen. And so I will just go on record as a council person and also ran on the platform of opposing this particular project in every way, shape, or form from its beginning to its end. And I'm speaking for myself, not for the council on this, because the council has not made a decision, but I want to go on record ahead of this presentation. I'll also say that, unfortunately, because of a prior commitment and the last-minute nature of this council meeting, that I will not be able to stay the whole time, but I will get a tape and listen to every comment that you all make. So I would just say that my main concern is I will be very fascinated to see the latest and greatest business plan that you bring forward, but with some specificity, because I can assure you that everything I read says that this is a mess and that the whole reason for the high-speed rail is to get us in several billion dollars so that the government can't get out. And unfortunately, we've been running our government at the state level that way for quite some time now, and the federal level even more so. And it's not working. And I frankly just don't believe what you're putting up here on the screen. So thank you.
Regarding the change of culture and being more responsive, if the section that would come through Canyon Country were tunneled, how would that mitigate the impacts that the IR are putting forward now?
Well, obviously, if we literally were to tunnel, let's just state the obvious, the sound attenuation would be significant. In other words, it would change the characteristics during that segment that is discussed. The tunneling, is as was pointed out a number of times, is used for engineering purposes. There are places, when you get into urban settings, often you have to go under the street because of the existing built environment. Tunneling can be a very effective way. It's very expensive. Now, one of the things that was noted earlier is that our chair of our board, Dan Richard, and by the way, our new incoming CEO, Jeff Morales, who starts next week, have both agreed that we should pursue at least analyzing the tunnel to assess what it means. In other words, to address in a more specific scientific way the very question you asked, what does this mean as far as the issues of concern? So, I'll just jump to that point and say that I'm here to support, and let me just acknowledge right up front that it's already been asked in numerous ways on numerous occasions, and a decision was made by the board to proceed with the two alternatives that were shown on the screen and did not include that one. I'm going to suggest that once the council hears from the public, it would be appropriate to document an ask in a letter. I apologize that it has to be done one more time, but it's also a good time to articulate exactly what you were after. And I will personally commit, in part because my boss, my CEO, and my chair have agreed, we will open this up for additional analysis as to what are the implications of tunneling or anything else that you bring up tonight. That's not a commitment to what we're going to do in the future, but it's a commitment to get more informed decision making. Because I can only answer your question in general terms. Let's get some science behind this.
Okay. At this time, we're going to move to the public. Madam Clerk. Okay. At this time, we have 15 speaker cards. Every speaker will have a total of 3 minutes to speak. What we'll do is we'll make a note of questions that need to be addressed by the experts at the end of it. So rather than answer the questions after every speaker, we'll take all 45 minutes of testimony, and then we'll allow Mr. Albright, Mr. Templis, and Mr. Sepulveda, and our city manager, the council, to respond. Are these in a specific order that was given, or... Okay. I'm going to call you in threes just so you know you're coming up.
First, we have Michael Hogan, followed by Bob Nolet, followed by Ken Whip.
Good job.
Either way. Actually sounds better.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council members, and staff. My name is Michael Hogan. First, let me tell you that the recording that was out here was I speak trained in France, and it had a sound expert that supposedly calculated the volume in this room. We discussed it with the engineers from the high-speed rail, and it could be brought down a little bit, could be raised a little bit. It's kind of iffy. We live in a canyon, and that's why it's called canyon country, and sound echoes like crazy in here. It did give an impact. You noticed it. You asked it to be turned off before the meeting. You noticed during the presentation, there was a Metrolink train went by. The high-speed train is at least twice as loud as the Metrolink train. So I think it was in the lines of being fairly accurate. Some say because of the noise and the vibration, this project will be more devastating than the CMEX project. I live on Roadrunner Road, also known as High Speed Railroad Runner. My neighbors' homes and my home are direct line of the proposed train tracks, and the current proposed routes displace over 20 families out of these 24 homes. The other route may bring it down to 12, but still, those are families that lived here all their lives. This, and what Marcia mentioned about the big cloud, there's my next-door neighbor was prevented from selling his home already because of this high-speed train. He was in escrow and it fell out because they found out there may be a train coming by. I'm also a board member of the Sulphur Springs Elementary School District, and the most critical concern with the high-speed rail, as it is planned, is that it is so close to this elementary school and the one next door, it will put over 1,000 students in danger, and the sound impacts, as you witnessed tonight from this sound, will impact the learning environment in the classroom. I don't know how many of you caught it. It's a great presentation from Metro. But reality, we went from adding two high-speed train tracks to two high-speed train tracks and another Metro track. We've got four tracks we're talking about back here, which is kind of interesting. At a higher speed, and that track is closer to the school, which we're concerned about. I'm also chairman of the Santa Clara Valley High-Speed Rail Task Force. The purpose of us forming this task force was to reach out to our own community to better inform and represent the interests of the residents and businesses throughout the entire Santa Clara Valley regarding the high-speed rail. It seems like Santa Clara wasn't getting much of a voice to the high-speed rail, and actually it was at their recommendation that we do this, and I think so far we've been fairly successful. Since we addressed the City Council in March, the High-Speed Rail Task Force has met with many individuals and organizations throughout the Valley. The consensus throughout the Valley has been that the high-speed rail, as currently proposed, is not a benefit to our community at all and will actually destroy the east side of our city. However, everyone is in agreement that if the high-speed rail is to move forward, it should be kept underground. I was president of the Authority Board meeting where we had Representative Mike Murphy. I represented the school district as well as the Santa Clara Valley Task Force. We had the Vista Canyon there, and we all asked that the tunnel be included in the EIR, which we all know it was rejected. That board did not consider it at all. With all due respect, I've gotten, and for the last 2 years, my neighbors, I've been in direct contact with all of these people here. They're great people. They respond. It just seems like they're always ready to add something else to look at to make everybody happy. I was one that got a call Thursday from Dan Richards as well, as a number of key people did. All of a sudden, Dan Richards is saying we can put the tunnel back in. The board is not interested in it at all. Anyway, you guys received a letter today on behalf of the High Speed Rail Task Force. We asked the City Council to undertake and review the proposed High Speed Rail project and to issue a resolution formally opposing the project as currently planned throughout our community. To strongly recommend that the high-speed rail continue underground through the developed east side and to consider filing or joining litigation against the project as currently planned in order to maximize the city's impact and influence in respect to major decisions to be taken during the next couple of years by the high-speed rail authority. This letter was signed by the High-Speed Rail Task Force, the Santa Clara Valley Chamber of Commerce, the Sulphur Springs School District, the Valley Industrial Association, the developer of Vista Canyon, the Kenyon Country Advisory Council, and the San Kenyon Homeowners Association. I appreciate the city looking out for our community's best interest, and I look forward to working with you and continuing this effort with the high-speed rail. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Hogan. We're going to move forward to the three-minute rule. I wanted to give Trustee Hogan as the chair of that committee a little more time, so thank you. Mr. Nolet, followed by Ken Whip, followed by Stephen Valdiant. He looks more dignified. He has a suit on.
I wore a suit and tie. Well, the first thing I want to do is welcome you as the city council to Sulphur Springs School and to the Sulphur Springs School District. So, and I also want to thank you for your efforts in working with this district over the years on a number of things, CEMEX mining being probably the most significant. And until the high-speed rail, CEMEX mining was the most onerous project that we were dealing with in this district. Sulphur Springs is 140 years old. We've been around for a while. We're the second oldest school in all of LA County. We have grave concerns as a school district regarding the number of students that will be 320 feet away from a high-speed rail track. We've been assured of the safety of this, but what, should something go wrong, I doubt that those people who have assured us of the safety will be anywhere to be found. We also have great concern about the frequency and the number of trips that will occur on this high-speed rail situation. So again, we would join in and with the advisory committee that is urging you as a city, and we'd be very willing to work closely with you, the Board of Trustees of the district, in taking whatever steps can be taken to either eliminate this project from coming through this portion of the valley, or ensuring that it go underground and mitigate the significant issues that it does create for the 1,000 students between ourselves and Pinecrest. So again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, and we hope that you will, and we will be glad to work with you closely and support you in any and every effort on the part of the City of Santa Clarita in bringing a more reasonable approach to this high-speed rail situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Next up, we have Ken Whip, followed by Stephen Valdiant, followed by Alan Ferber.
I have a suit on. Can I be here?
That's fine.
That's okay. Mr. Mayor and Council members, my name is Ken Whip. I'm Vice President of the Acton Town Council. I've been working, and the Council's been working for 3 years, with the authority in an attempt to mitigate its crossing through Acton. What we have done recently in that we felt the crossing through Acton would be detrimental to the community. At a very serious point, we have teamed with Agua Dulce, the town council in Agua Dulce. I will say that the authority has become very responsive and has heard our concerns. Unfortunately, the train is the train is the train. It travels at 220 miles an hour. What you are able to turn off with the click of a finger, you will not be able to turn off when the train goes through. It is at 70 decibels when it passes. That may have been more, but not much. And even though the sound dissipates, we have canyons, we have reflective surfaces, it's going to bounce around all over the place. And you talk about tunneling. We've considered tunneling, I'm not an engineer and I'm not an estimator of these systems, but I would think that if you travel on grade and called it a factor of one, if you traveled on an earthen viaduct, it would be maybe a factor of 15. If you put it on a concrete structure, nice little T structures, it would probably be a factor of about 30, but you put it through a tunnel, you're talking a factor of 100. That may or may not be accurate, but I know that it's an exponential increase in price And it's not a very compelling system to have it all underground. It means you go into a hole, and I don't know how you're going to get ridership who basically rides a subway from downtown LA to wherever, and that's the problem. So we have done, what the town councils have done is we created a survey which we put out to both towns. It was published in both papers, and people were invited to respond to it. And what we found was, as we expected, in general, 85% of people objected to the whole thing. And then we found that 94% of people objected to it going through Acton at all. And the reason people in Agua Dulce care about this is that it goes so closely to our schools. And so it will literally destroy the school system, we're convinced. So we have, as councils, we're putting out a joint letter to the supervisor, because we're advisory to the supervisor, and we're going to say, look, we oppose this. We flat out oppose this. I recommend you do the same. I think you need to look at that very, very carefully as a way to approach it. And the last thing I have to say, I know I'm coming up on the end of my time. I don't know how enthusiastic I am about being referred to as a basin. LA basin. Do you guys mean that? We can call ourselves a basin, but anyway, thank you very much for your attention.
Stephen, followed by Alan Perman, followed by Richard Keynes.
Mayor Ferry, council members, I'm Steve Valenziano. I'm a development partner with the Vista Canyon Project, and others here tonight will be speaking about the community devastation that the train could bring to schools and to homes. I will point out that one of the alignments being studied comes right through the economic commercial core of Vista Canyon. We worked very hard and long over a period of 5 years with city staff and many people in this room to create a project that the community wanted. And the economic heart of that project is also the reason the annexation works. In other words, the revenue for the annexation comes from our commercial core. So it is absolutely essential that the tunnel be considered as an option. I'd like to acknowledge Greg and Chairman Richard for, in a few short months, coming that far. Apparently, they are willing to talk about it. I'll make a point. I don't have my numbers exactly. The high-speed rail numbers tend to move around a little bit, but I believe the cost of the tunnel through our community will be around $400 million, as I'm told, round numbers. That would be order of magnitude one-half of 1% of the budget for the high-speed rail. And as a developer, we have a lot of costs. We try to control our costs, but one-half of 1% is not a showstopper. And it means an awful lot to so many on the eastern side of this community that it really happened. Finally, even though the high-speed rail is moving towards us now, a little bit willing to consider this, what can go wrong will go wrong, and they're going to need a lot of encouragement and therapy. So our letter, our task force letter, that requested that we do some advanced work on litigation strategies, it will probably come to that, so we should begin to get ready. And I think with that extra encouragement, the tunneling option as an EIR mitigation could become very attractive in the end for high-speed rail should this project actually come to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Alan Perkin, followed by Richard Keynes, followed by Diane Adler.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Member. My name is Alan Perkin. I'm the Chair of the Canyon Country Advisory Committee. In my work career, I got to see a lot of demos and a lot of sales pitches. And so one of the things I do is I start looking at things that I've been told and decide whether or not those things are accurate and how much I can believe the rest of the presentation. So one of the first things we heard tonight was this is going to be green technology. It's all going to be based on renewable energy. But yet in the same sheet that we were handed out, it talks about the cost of fuel in 2030 being somewhere between $6.11 and $2.60. So if it was going to be green technology, it certainly isn't going to be in the near future.
Now, the one thing that I agree with that got said today is that most people, when you start throwing out millions and billions, their eyes just roll back in their head. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen to me. So when I look at something that says we've got a break-even point of 2.3 million riders, I assume that's a year, and I divide that by 365, that means there's only 7,000 riders per day. And if there's 6 trains per hour or 24 hours in a day, that's 144 trains, which says less than 70 passengers on a train. So I'd like to understand, after we've talked about this in relationship to the number of people going down the 5 or taking airplanes on that route. Lastly, I can't believe that this job is really going to come in at $68.4 million. And one of the reasons I can't believe it is because the numbers on here says that it's going to create in construction 990,000 jobs over 15 years. And this being a California prevailing wage job, if we had an average of $75,000 per year per employee, that would make the cost of the wages alone $75 billion, which is more than enough. This was going to be 100% self-sustaining in cost, and it was going to have a revenue of about $100 billion a year. With $2.3 million riders to pay for it, that only makes a ticket from here to Sacramento $50,000. On behalf of myself and my grandchildren who will have to pay for this, we're bitterly opposed to high school.
Richard Keynes, Diane Adler, followed by Roberta. Ahead, sir.
Good evening. My name is Richard Keynes. I'm from the community.
Talking to the mic.
I'm sorry. My name is Richard Keynes. I'm from the Canyon Country community. I live on the right-of-way for the high-speed rail. And what I want to talk about is the initiative that those who voted for it have been lied to. Our vote has been subverted. It was supposed to cost $38 billion. It went up to $100 billion. And now they're giving us a bargain at $68 billion. Also, in the initiative, it said it was going to go on the I-5 corridor. What happened to the I-5 corridor? Why all of a sudden does it have a 70 to 80 mile loop out to Lancaster? Is that for some reason other than to pick up the airport and have a transportation hub that we did not vote for? Or is that to make Brinkerhoff Parsons even richer because they'll be designing that project as well? And finally, why do we need it when the costs are so unreasonable that it's unbelievable? And I think Governor Brown says that he wants this to be his legacy. I don't want to pay for his legacy. I don't think our neighbors want to pay for his legacy. I think what we want is a common sense approach to our tax dollars and our tax dollars. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Diane Adler, Bertha Gonzalez Harper, and is there another Ken Whip? Was it different?
No.
Two cards? Okay. All right.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, City Council. My name is Diane Adler. I agree with all the people that have said that this has basically become a shapeshifter. It seems to change at every meeting that I've been at, and I've been at a lot of meetings. It's as if we're being consoled, but behind the curtain where the Wizard of Oz is, there's other conversations. But I'm not really here to talk about that. I have some medical concerns that I just wanted to put out there to parents, to homeowners. Obviously, there's no reason to talk about the money. There isn't any. The train will be coming 2 properties away from me, wiping out my neighbors, my friends, people that I care about. But I'm also very afraid of something called coccidiomycosis, which is only 8 inches into the dirt. And all it takes is moving the earth, it's flies around, takes 2 to 4 weeks to get it. It will hurt the workers, it will hurt the children. And what got me thinking about this was the first gentleman that spoke, and unfortunately I don't know his name, from the high speed rail, but he said, now they're going to speed it up. Like, speed up the reports, speed up the environmental reports. I just wanted to put it out there, there's a lot of concern with illness. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adler. Verdict in Thomas Harper, Kathleen Trinity, Thomas Matulich.
Good evening, Inspector Thomas Harper, 20-year Canyon Country resident. I actually live about a mile from the Via Princesa station as the crow flies, and I hear the current Metrolink trains very clearly, especially at night. During the day, there's a lot of ambient noise from traffic, so it's not as bad, but at night, it is quite audible, and I cannot believe that anybody would even surmise that a train running every 5 minutes, because they said 12 trains, 60 minutes to an hour, every five minutes. So you're going to have trains running at 220 miles an hour every 5 minutes. And there's no possible way that that's not going to have a tremendous impact on our area. One of the things that really bothers me is the city and the community spend a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort trying to bring Canyon Country up. And it seems to me that the federal government and the state government are doing their darndest to decimate our area. It's like, what is up with these people? I've attended most of the meetings that these nice people have put on. They always tell us what they're going to do. They ask us for our input, but our input usually goes, whoosh. You know, it's just, they're not really listening to us. I can also say that I've traveled Europe on the high-speed rail trains on a Europass. And the high-speed ones are so much more expensive that they're pretty much empty most of the time. Most of the normal people, if you will, travel on the regular trains. So there's no way that these trains are going to run without heavy, heavy subsidies from us, the taxpayers. So I'm sorry, but I really think the city's position should be that we are opposed, period, end of discussion, to this boondoggle being foisted on our area. And if it must happen, if it's going to happen regardless of what we want, then have it underground as much as possible so that we can at least mitigate some of the worst impacts. Because there's no way that between the noise and the vibration and the frequency of these trains that it's not going to ruin our community. I mean, it's not possible. So it's an expensive, not needed, by the way, because the quota by 2050, 60 million people, I would dispute those population estimates too, because population is leaving California, not coming in, and especially in certain areas like Merced. Foreclosures and empty homes boarded up are all over the place. So where these people are coming up with, all these extra people are going to be in California and have to take a very expensive high-speed train. And it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to, I would virtually say, everybody in the room except for the paid consultants. So bad idea, wrong place, too much money, too much noise, too much vibration. We should oppose it.
Thank you, Bert. Kathleen Trinity, Thomas Matulich, and Kurt Roney.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. I'd like to say, my name is Kathleen Trinity. I'm from Manhattan. I hope I'm not intruding. But I'd like to say that be an act and feel your pain. We too live between two mountain ranges, the San Gabriels and the Sierra Colonnas. High-speed rail runs right through an immense echo chamber. The noise demonstration some of you heard earlier this evening would echo through our canyons every 5 to 6 minutes, as has been said, at least at 70 decibels. You know, 90 decibels is dangerous to human hearing. Imagine the stress of hearing this noise all day long and most of the evening. You can't really mitigate this. Much of it is going to be on viaducts, and I don't know if you can build walls 60 to 100 feet high to mitigate it. Tunnels, from what I understand, can only be so long because the train has to, so to speak, come up for air every so often to where people also am going to fix it if it needs repair. To ask anyone living, to ask anyone to live with this kind of noise day in and day out is inhumane. It's a stress that I don't think we humans are made for, let alone our animal friends. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Santa Cruz Valley, they say the quality of life. They want
their employees and children to experience a high quality of life. The chamber believes that this does not provide a high quality of life on the east side of this valley, and we are adamantly opposed to how it's currently laid out. And so we're open to other alternatives, but how it's currently proposed, we are not. And we are asking for your support to oppose and to consider future litigation on this project with other partners. Again, I'm Chris Angelo. I'm the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce here for the Santa Clara Valley. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Well, you sir. Please tell me you didn't move from COC right here next to the
trip. Hi, my name is Bill Barrett. I've lived in Southern California for 35 years, 29 years out here. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Aerospace Dynamics. For the last 23 years, we are working on a new project. Actually, several of them, but one of them's taken us 4 years. It's a brand new building. It'd be about 88,000 square feet. There's been a lot of different changes and other things that have happened to us to make that happen. But there's something that we do is we make sure when we make an investment, that we're not going to involve any money from government. We're going to do it ourselves. We're going to invest it ourselves. We make sure that we're going to make a profit at it, and we don't have any problem putting those numbers up. I haven't seen any information up here as to what the ROI is on this, what the payback is. I don't see how any government project I've ever been involved with, when we used to be a largely defense contractor, we're now commercial, about 94%. I don't see any government projects out there, federal, state, or otherwise, coming in on budget, except for maybe local. So I would ask to see more transparency. I would like to see just logic prevail here. When I saw the initial map, route here. It begs the question, why are we going in a straight line if we are going to do something like this? We have all kinds of rails service here. They're talking about a whole bunch of different stops. How do you go 220 stop, start, and actually get us any kind of a real benefit? I don't get it. So I would move that if we are going to do this rail service as a state or as a nation, that we connect it and stay out of this valley altogether and skip Valley Basin as well. It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Valerie Thomas.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. My name is Valerie Thomas. I've lived in Placerita Canyon for 35 years, and incidentally, this task force letter is also signed by Placerita Canyon. I'll hand you a copy of that. We're very much opposed to it. I've heard a great deal in this room about how it's going to disrupt with the noise and the air pollution. I have not heard a single thing about the expansive soil and the known active earthquake faults that are going to be disturbed by the 70-foot underground tunnel. There is no way that can be done. And how the project would have gotten to this point without those things being considered is absolutely beyond me. And I would hope that the council takes a very strong stand against this project coming through, destroying our valley, offering us no benefit, and quite possibly making things far worse geologically than they are at the present time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. We have two final speakers. One speaker, I held it back, lives on Ackerman Avenue, but there was no name. Why don't you come on up? I'm sorry, your name wasn't on here. And then the last speaker will be Eric Jakeman. What's your name, sir?
My name is Art. Thank you for giving me the Art.
What last name, sir?
Yami.
How do you spell that?
J-O-H-M-N-Y.
Thank you.
I'd like to make my attention addressed to this gentleman here. So regarding some of the comments, somebody mentioned earlier that the trains will be here every 5 minutes. I'm assuming that's the average, so what you're speaking about is basically every 2 minutes on peak hours. So it is, it's not every 5 minutes, it's 12 trains per hour.
12 trains per hour.
We'll answer at the end.
Correct.
Yeah, just on the principle, go ahead.
Okay, so again, I guess 12 trains an hour on average will be much more trains during peak hours, unless you plan on flying 50 trains at 4 o'clock in the morning. And at that estimate, we're talking about the entire traffic of LAX in personnel human traffic. I mean, unless we're going to have 300 in San Francisco and Union Station, I don't know who's going to be taking this train to Big One. I can put that out. And regarding the noise, I'd like to mention that our current metro trains honk their horns as they do cross the intersections. Are these trains going to be doing that too? No? So there's no regard for people crossing our
track? We'll answer at the end. Go ahead. So horn honking. Go ahead and talk to us, and then we'll ask the question you're asking.
Okay. And the other question I have is basically the estimates that they have made for travel times, community, and had skipped airplane travel times. And when they mentioned auto travel, but what is the airplane travel time? Can you please explain to me why anybody with any sense would take a train that takes 3 times the length of a flight and pay additional money for it? I mean, the German community said, oh, Southwest would not be flying complaining planes because of the traffic. In fact, later on they mentioned that the Lancaster station is past their capacity. So it's not the airports that will be past capacity in 20 years. This train will be obsolete in 20 years when it's built. It's completely useless. No one will be traveling in this plane, I mean, in these trains at the cost that they're estimating.
Thank you, sir. Eric, can you take me?
Good evening, Council. My name is Eric Jakeman. One, I appreciate you guys being over there and taking our calls, our questions, and our support. You have to forgive me, I've only been in the Valley since 1965. So, a couple of concerns I have is one, like has been said before, it's going to cost more than flying. Doesn't make any sense. Interfering is going to break through the breadbasket of the California state. Why disrupt our farmland? Ridership in San Joaquin Valley is going to be nil, as it's been said here. It doesn't benefit San Creed at all. There's nothing in it for us. What's in it for us? There's nothing here for us. We're just getting short into the stick, excuse the expression. And the noise, unless I'm mistaken, the California State Noise Ordinance says that you have 55 decibels for residential property during the daytime, 45 at night. Does it 5 decibels for every zoning classification up from that? You get to M4, which is nuclear power plant, you're allowed 70 decibels. And your city is going to be about 70 decibels. I don't think I want to live next to something creating much noise as a nuclear power plant, going that much every day. I might be mistaken on the numbers, but I kind of do want to know where we're living. The grade crossings, everybody understands, that's just where you guys are going to tear up all the streets to put this new highway on through Santa Clarita that doesn't benefit us at all. Construction projects can take years and years and years. We're going to be put up with construction noise, harassment, or pollution for all those years, and we get nothing out of it again. I'm assuming there's going to be a change or something with this. An assumption, we all know it's a very bad word, that your project is going to be supplied materials, rail on rail, locomotives, workers are going to be from here. You're not going to subcontract material supply from Korea to refine steel in Japan and ship it over here to be used. You like to create it here using American work to do American jobs. That's an assumption. I think it's a huge assumption. Also, I heard that you said you kind of have the right-of-way in the Pacific. Kind of doesn't. I might be mistaken, but it's the whitest canyon crossing over the railroad tracks that was stopped because somebody forgot to ask Union Pacific. So I'd like to know, do you have that through right away, or do you not? Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Okay. How we're going to proceed is I'm going to give you a synopsis of issues I heard, if anyone wants to add to that. And I'm going to give you guys 10, 15 minutes to sort of decide. We're going to go on a 10-minute break so you guys can sort of make sure everyone knows the issues we want done. Yep. You want to keep going? I'm okay.
Keep going.
Okay, that's fine. We're good. That's good for us. I was trying to be respectful that you guys... So the specific issues that... Yeah, the specific issues we need to address. Superintendent's concern, obviously, regarding safety for the school and or the neighborhoods. I've heard multiple times the frequency and number of trips, and then how that average pans out peak time versus a 4 a.m. So I think that needs to be clarified. Clearly, we need to clarify the daytime, nighttime decimal, the 55, 45 versus 70 decimals, and maybe you can compare that to, I don't know what 70 decimals is. I mean, I'm not, so you can sort of give us, I know it's loud, you have Bob next to you here. I would like to know the cost of tunneling. There were some numbers thrown out there, what the cost of tunneling would be. There was definitely concern regarding this going from a proposition $38 million approval to a $98 billion to now $64. So I think what assurance is it's not going to be a train to nowhere. I think a good question that came up, and I think the council heard this in a, I think it was a couple years ago, why not the I-5 corridor? I think it was specifically brought to us on why that was not going to be feasible by the state or federal government. So I think for the Canyon Country residents, in fairness, they need to know why that was not an option. I think it's also fair, the ticket price issue. I mean, right now, you get on a plane at Burbank, you go to Sacramento, Ken, we're spending how much? $300 for a round trip? What is it going to look like for a resident that goes from Burbank? Someone, I think it was Kathleen Trinity, mentioned the come up for air. Just to take, I mean, how far can you tunnel before you need parades? How is that in relation to us, Acton, Agua Dulce? The horn issue, definitely. I mean, every night at 2 a.m. I hear the freight train. And then mornings and nights at MetroLink, is there a horn issue? And I think the right-of-way issue in regards to through our valley staff and or council, were there other... Things that were also in there, so I didn't want to address some of those. Those are the consistent things. So, was there anything else we wanted to add?
The metro double tracks.
Oh, okay.
Earthquake fault.
Oh, that's a good one, too, yeah. You can talk about the IR process in the seismic area, how that's concerned. Also, the number of tracks, going from one track to four tracks, so how that looks. And, we also have a current tunnel. The tracks go through from where the San Fernando Valley ends into Newhall. Does that get widened? You know, how do you know? There's only one track, obviously, now. How does that go? So I don't know how that goes. City manager, any questions? Councilor McLean?
When you're talking about your initial segment, are you planning to put a train on it, or are you just building the electrified track?
The Mayor Pro Tem Keller?
No.
Okay. Well, you're about to stay. I am going to take a little rest of the break, so. I will be back, I promise.
Mayor, could you ask for concise answers for the gentleman, please?
Excuse me?
Could you ask for concise answers for the gentleman?
Yes. Mr. Albright, they just want to make sure your answer is concise and specifically rather than generalities.
What if the train breaks off?
We're going to ask. Mayor Pro Tem, you're in trouble. We're back.
Ladies and gentlemen, we just received word the Kings won 6-1.
Thank you. We did have an opportunity to kind of close the reach of these items. So I'm going to hit some of them, make a general closing statement just in case I have to duck out because of the limits on how late a flight I'll go out for. There was a question about the cost, and I would encourage folks that haven't seen, yes, the cost has increased. And one of the things that I'd like to point out is is a very difficult thing to do. It was to say, okay, we've reevaluated, and when we all voted for Proposition 1A, we had a different cost tag. I'll tell you right now, this board and the staff that they direct said, we got to figure out the exact cost of this. So yes, the cost went dramatically up. Now that we've been teasing a little bit about it, it was at 100, that was too much, let's bring it down to 68. I would encourage people to take a look at what we cut out and what we did to change that. It is essentially using the same unit cost. We literally changed the scope, delivered quicker. There was a few other changes in there. So I encourage you. We're very confident that the $68.4 billion, an enormous amount of money, is well substantiated and accurate, and those are in future dollars. So I would encourage people to... in fact, on many of these things, there's more information on the website, and the technical documents that support the business plan. For those that have lots of free time on their hands, there's a lot of information. And I'd like to just suggest that at the end of this, if we in fact need to come back and unpack in more detail ridership and how it was developed in relation to revenue, we'd be pleased to do that in very explicit detail with anybody that wants to do it. There's a lot of information. So that I think went from $38 billion to $68 billion item. The ticket price, we calculate based on, the revenue is based upon many factors, one of which is how close is this to the ticket price for a pair. We, in our previous business plan, we were using 50%. We would be at 50% of whatever air is for that same market. Just to be more conservative, this business plan and this ridership and revenue analysis said, no, let's be really very conservative. We're now saying 83% of airfare. Just like across the rest of the world, you can run and get the same kind of trip. I'm talking about regional rail travel, 100 to 600 mile trip. You can always beat the cost of an airline just because of the technology and the operation. So we used what we saw as a very conservative estimate that it would attract a private sector concession at 83% of airfare for equivalent. The horn issue, I particularly asked for this one. We don't really need horns because we don't come to at grade intersections. The high speed rail sits separated and it never has to have bother traffic. Someone did notice and reference the fact that we have to build structures to do that, to separate cars to go underneath or over our highways or our rails. So the bottom line is we won't honk horns on the high-speed rail. And I'll let John speak to horn honking on other rail.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
Okay, so when you're building the right-of-way with the four tracks, will the MetroLink then become separated so we won't hear the MetroLink or freight trains anymore?
If we share a common right-of-way with high-speed rail, we will break separate MetroLink as well. The train horns only work where there's an at-grade crossing.
Correct.
And you have quite some issues. I don't think we'll be able to talk about that more.
Okay.
But if we have a grade separated alignment with Metro, we will not have a Metro horn there as well.
Okay.
So.
There is also a question about right-of-way and the idea that Union Pacific might interrupt something. Let me just note that on the high-speed rail project, we're purchasing new right-of-way. In other words, it's not going to be associated with Union Pacific. Now, with the exception of, as we're phasing out, we'll be doing blended services. So in fact, there will be, as we're rolling out and building over time, portions of your trip might be on a rail right-of-way, whether it's a Union Pacific or... But ultimately, the high-speed rail will be on its own dedicated rail track. With the exceptions of when you get to San Jose on into San Francisco, we'll be coordinating along with Caltrans, and then also we'll be doing some sharing, particularly from the Union Station out to Anaheim with Metro. In other words, there'll be a few places, but generally the rest of it will all be on brand new right-of-way. There was also a question concerning this initial construction. When will there be trains? And let me just point out, the sixth $1 billion that we're asking to start construction in the Central Valley to start building the backbone. There will be no trains on that initial construction. The idea is that over a 10-year period, if you look at the business plan, we plan to have rolling construction going. The $6 billion we're starting, no trains. It's just building the infrastructure in place. And then the next infrastructure that has to be built will be through the Tehachapis. Lots of tunnels and structures. The next one would be working our way to the San Fernando Valley, we call the LA Basin. Sorry, but all the places. Each of those construction pieces are intended to get you ready for electric trains initial operating. So in the interim, the business side calls for us to be having electric high-speed rail trains after a 10-year period of construction, where we go from the Northern California Merced area, connected to the existing rail, but you get on a high-speed rail at that point near Merced, and run all the way down into San Fernando Valley at one of those places we discussed, and then get on Metro, our Metro Link. So that would be, it'd take 10 years before you actually drive high-speed rail. And our present business strategy, as we've mentioned it out, that's based, by the way, on the fact that we feel we have to get from Northern California down through the Tehachapis and probably on into the basin instead of just Palmdale before we get the ridership numbers to bring concession in. If the ridership numbers are there, there could be some opportunities even for earlier electric high-speed rail before that. So our, and the ridership, I love to stop with this one. I would love to take some time to have folks come and explain the ridership and how it's been looked at by, as I mentioned earlier, a third party, internationally experienced peer review, and we're very confident that we have conservative ridership numbers and conservative revenue, and yet we show it for the business plan. It's very easy to break even, so to speak, and make this a profitable venture. We will not, by statute, we cannot subsidize the high-speed rail. And by evidence based upon worldwide experience, it will operate at a profit once we get enough infrastructure in place. So that initial operating segment has to be long enough. Now, in case I have to leave, or we'll next have our engineering team and others come up and answer the rest of the questions. But in case I have to leave, I'm just going to repeat that I'm going to encourage you, and I apologize once again, that over and over you've asked for certain alternatives that did not survive through our alternative analysis, the tunnel specifically. I would ask the city, based upon your feedback here, to give us your ask. In other words, provide us with what it is that you want and need in very explicit terms. What are the outcomes type that you'd like to see on noise, on impacts on Vista Canyon, on school safety, ridership and revenue? As explicit as you feel comfortable asking us, I have made a commitment to you already. I've already, I know for a fact, our new CEO and our chairman of the board has agreed we will pursue opening up the idea of additional alternatives to address the impacts that you described you want to address. And I'm going to just repeat. If you're willing to write that letter one more time, communicate one more time through a letter from the council, we will take action on it and get right back to you and explain what we're going to do to address those issues.
Just one thing, how about a technology that is basically no noise, no vibration, all above ground, above grade, that is cheaper to maintain? What about that kind of a technology?
I would ask you to please put that into the letter, as far as that you'd like to explain why we would pick a steel on steel, as we talked about earlier, versus another technology.
Well, I know why you say you do, but it's because of the people that are kind of funding you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm so sorry that Burbank doesn't go out later and I didn't hear come back. I was going to go ahead and catch it. I'll be leaving in a few minutes and I apologize for leaving.
Thank you, sir.
I'll discuss some of the other questions that you raised. I think the first one has to do with safety. Without question, safety is a paramount concern to operating a system like this. If you look at high-speed rail experience throughout the world, it's a phenomenally safe system. You take the Japanese Shinkansen experience as a prime example, and they include somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 billion passengers without a serious accident. That's not to say that throughout the world there haven't been accidents, there sure have. There's been some derailments in Japan as a result of earthquakes, but again, these trains, you've got to understand how these trains work. They're very lightweight, they're not like freight trains. When they do derail, they have systems in place to keep the trains heading straight down the alignment. They don't dig into the ground like heavy freight trains do. And when you look at the serious accidents that have occurred, one in China just this last year as a result of an electrical storm disrupting their control system, and then also another accident that occurred in Germany some years ago at a point at a crossover where a wheel came apart on the train itself and the train had appeared of a bridge. That's more as a result of, you know, that was an accident where it could certainly have been avoided. So when you look at the kind of experience with high-speed train and safety with regards to high-speed train, it's absolutely been phenomenal throughout the world. When you look at the frequency of trips, we talked about 12 trains an hour. That's a peak operation at a peak hour time of the day at full build-out in 2035. The trains do not operate all night long. Safety is a paramount consideration again. And every night the trains go into the yard. The maintenance crews go out onto the rails and check the rails and make sure that everything is safe and the operating systems are working properly. So that's the peak times anyway. It's not 24-hour operations. With regard to the nighttime, the day and nighttime noise factors, we're going to analyze the EIR and we're going to base the analysis and the impacts on criteria that are established by the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration. We have to meet or mitigate to those particular levels, and that's going to be the goal. There's a number of things that we can do, either with sound walls, track forms, that kind of thing, to mitigate the noise on these systems.
Can you give us real quick the standard? Because I've heard so many numbers thrown out, 55, 45, 70. What is the standard that you have to mitigate based on that organization?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I honestly can't tell you. Okay. I'm not sure.
Can you make sure you get that back?
Thank you. We certainly will.
No problem.
The cost of tunneling was the other question. For this 2-mile piece of tunnel here in Santa Clarita, it's about $500 million. It's about $250 million a mile for a tunnel. Tunnel lengths, 6 miles is probably an ideal optimum for tunnel lengths. When you get into the aerodynamics, there's some complicated physics with a train traveling 220 miles an hour and entering a small diameter bore of a tunnel. In the case of the 8-mile tunnel coming out of the San Fernando Valley here, we have a tunnel vent structure at about mile 4. So we can put tunnel ventilation structures to come up to the surface to help ventilate and alleviate the problem and actually make the tunnel lengths longer. But then, as we heard comments tonight, then it detracts from the rider experience as well. But that's certainly something that we can look at. With regard to the I-5, we did do another study of the I-5. The actual proposition did not include the I-5. It actually did include the Antelope Valley. But we were asked to take another look at the I-5 to see if it didn't present some opportunities that we had overlooked back in 2005 when the program study was done. And in fact, what we discovered in looking at it was it is a constrained corridor in the sense that there isn't a great deal of flexibility in it. You put a rail alignment in it. There's maybe one or a variation on one opportunity to be able to do that. It crosses the San Gabriel and San Andreas faults at a very critical point in the apex of these two fault zones for quite a distance. And so there's a lot of seismic considerations. It's also a very steep corridor. We have lengths of rail that are 3.5% for rather long periods of time, so the train speeds are considerably slower. So given those constraints with opportunities to vary the alignments, with the fact we have to cross the Garlock and San Andreas Fault, we made the recommendation to the board to not continue to study the I-5. Number of tracks, I guess, the question about this particular corridor will have 2 tracks for high-speed train. I'll let Don address what MetroLink may have here in this particular corridor. So I guess one of the questions that came up was what happens at a stop, right? We're going to have all these stops, and how do you run trains high-speed when you have a stop? Well, actually, the way it works is that the high-speed trains, at each station there's four tracks. So platform track trains pull off and stop, and mainline trains can whiz right through the station without stopping. That's how these express times ultimately work. And so I guess, Don, you want to talk about the tracking in the New Hall Tunnel? Or?
There's a couple things in there. And going back to the grade crossing issue for a moment, it's been in our policy with the High Speed Rail Authority that whenever we have tracks that are grade separated, we have metro tracks adjacent to them, we want grade separated metro tracks as well. That's what's in process on the entire San Fernando Valley. The entire San Fernando Valley, where the corridor is that High Speed Rail will be running along the metro corridor along San Fernando Road, that will be entirely grade separated once that comes through. In segments through the canyon here, if we share an alignment with the High Speed Rail Authority, we will be grade separated with them on the same structure or adjacent structure, but we will be grade separated if we take that advantage and get that additional community benefit out of the project. Regarding train horns, somebody brought up the issue of train horns. The Metrolink does use train horns. We do not have a quiet zone on the Antelope Valley line. There are FRA regulations about how you have to use a train horn at the crossings. So they will blow their horn at each crossing, whether it be a pedestrian crossing or an at-grade crossing. That is the way it is. Now, as part of our coming countywide grade crossing safety program that we're going to be doing later on this year, one of the things we wanted to start looking at is where the opportunities exist for quiet zones. And maybe we can work with communities to try and incorporate something like that as we move through further along. Regarding the number of tracks, we are looking at double tracking segments of this line, and it's something that we need to improve the service along this line. And we will have two tracks eventually in most of these places. And if we do not perceive us having two tracks through the tunnel at this time, the tunnel is pretty significant, and adding another track in that tunnel is not possible. We have to actually expand the tunnel. So we have to come up with another means of doing it. So we have to model it and figure out what that would be. And we have to deal with how the trains are actually going to operate on the portal. And I think, oh yes, this gentleman over here, you had a question about a grade crossing. Metro owns the right-of-way through this canyon. And Metrolink operates the right-of-way, operating the Metrolink service. And the Union Pacific is a tenant railroad on this right-of-way. So I don't know what the instance was to call the Union Pacific. If anything, those at that grade crossing probably would have been to call Metrolink. So I'm not sure what the case was. So
it's kind of a delay issue of you're heading to grade crossings. What do we got to put up with what you're doing?
If that's the question, if it's dealing with delays while we improve grade crossings, that's something we'll have to work out in a new phase and have to figure that one out. But we'll have to deal with that as it comes. But the advantage of the grade crossing improvement outweighs the slight inconvenience of a few days of construction.
As I went back through my notes here, I failed to miss the issue of seismicity and whether tunneling will increase seismic activity in the area. And in fact, Mother Nature is a pretty formidable force. Tunneling through a fault zone is not going to change the fault characteristics at all. And in fact, there's a number of examples in California where we do have tunnels that go through seismic faults, or actually through fault zones. The BART system goes through the Hayward Fault. The Hollywood Red Line here goes through the Hollywood Fault. And given our understanding of those faults, we can actually design tunnels for high-speed train operations for faults that have smaller movements. Actually in tunnels. It's the larger movements like the San Andreas Fault or the Garlock Fault where we will be crossing those faults at the surface.
Council? Council Representative?
You've given us a lot of material to talk about. One, I want to thank you for taking time. Coming out of the legislative court community, we sincerely do appreciate it. There's a lot of discussion, the request maybe letters and asking for what we need to satisfy our community. From listening to the speakers, I think it was pretty clear what would satisfy this community. Drop this project. they're not going to vote on taking their homes. What are we going to do with people a third of a mile away that no longer could ever possibly sell their homes because of the impacts of the noise and having this thing right there in their hip pocket? Are we paying them also? I appreciate, and something was said by one of the speakers, and maybe one of my fellow councilmen, there seems to be a lot of ambiguity on this matter, and I concur. There's a lot of, today I hear this, tomorrow I hear that. I actually had a lady representing me when we were in Washington 3 weeks ago talking about CMAX, hard to believe, once again trying to protect our community. And she referred to this project in California, the high-speed rail, as a lost leader to set the standard for the rest of the country. And I told her, I said, why don't you come out to Santa Cruz and tell these folks who lose their home about being a lost leader? I just found it unbelievable. Other people in Washington reported, don't worry about it, it's not going to happen. I said, really? Yes, it's not going to happen. I'm talking to several congressional members because the federal government is not going to put up any funds for this project. And I said, well, why don't we pull it now? Why don't we stop it now? I tell you, and I'm not here to insult your folks. I know you're committed to it, and I understand this is your position, and you've been working on it for a long period of time. But the truth of the matter is, will this insanity ever stop? We do one thing after another to put this state, just how far down in the toilet can we put this state financially? What will this cost the individual taxpayer, ultimately? And your own reports indicate, well, we're working on identifying personal funding and so forth. Really? And I'm not countering, you are really truly the experts. In Washington, I got a report. There is not a high-speed rail in the world that pays for itself. Not in the world, and you're the expert. I'm just passing the information. And to what extent are we going to have our citizens having to come in behind us and make this thing possible? Guys, we are not doing people's business. We are not listening to our citizens. We genuinely are not doing what's right to the people of California. I consider this, when you talk about the initial approval of $38 billion, and now there are estimates all the way in Washington and certainly in Sacramento, this thing could be as high as $150 billion. I know you disagree, and you're telling us how you've done $30 billion in cost savings. Even at your numbers, it's a fraud on the people of California to go forward with this project. This is not what they voted for. And I want that letter to be signed by the entire city council representing the entire city of Santa Clarita. And I'd like to thank the people of California telling our governor and our legislators in Sacramento, and I want that letter to go to Washington as well, that we have got to stop this.
To follow.
You know what? We need to do something. We need to fix our infrastructure. We had several members of SCAG go over to Japan and China, and they came back and they said, we are worse than a third world country when it comes to our infrastructure and our transportation system. But we have to do something that makes sense for all of us. Okay. Bye.
Sorry.
And what makes sense is to take the $4 or $5 or $6 billion that you're going to spend, and Governor Brown can have his legacy by upgrading our current infrastructure. I had to go down to Downey to a meeting the other day. It took over 2 hours going between 5 and 10 miles per hour on the I-5 freeway to get there. I would have loved to be able to get into a train and have it take me 45 minutes to an hour to get there, but we can't do that. And this
can you get to LA International Train?
You're absolutely right. Let's take the $6 billion and build us some infrastructure to get us to where we want to go, when we need to go. And I'm sorry, but I don't think high-speed train, which isn't going to really be high-speed because you can't go 220 miles per hour through San Fernando Valley anyway. With this kind of technology, it's just a problem, a very big problem. And we just need to get you guys to hear.
Councilmember West?
There's a lot of emotion in the room, and when you impact people's homes, you bring out their defenses, and that is justified. And Santa Cruz has always been the spot on the map that seems to get hit, because everywhere all these things want to go, it always hits us, or it comes to us, or it gets dumped on us, or it gets mined out of us, or it gets railed through us, but it's us, it's always us. So we're pretty used to fighting, pretty used to wars, and pretty used to life. I think you're pretty determined that whether California is like or not, you can build a rail project.
Then a map.
Right, then discussions long enough. And I don't know if you get the funding. The truth is, I don't know if you get where you want to go. But I do know that our job as a council is to protect our constituency. And we're all California. I think we all really want the same thing. We all want. We want our state to be great. We want financial responsibility back. We want our families safe. We want to live the life that we appreciate and love in our country. So I don't know exactly what we're going to do, but I do know, Bob made a good point, you know. I don't believe that you can ask the voters to fund something and vote for it when it's on the ballot. And then you tell them it's three times as much and now it's half as much. You know, it's a moving target. And I believe you are the expert. So when you talk about engineering issues, you speak from people that study every day, and we don't. And do you know that people can't sit there for 20 years and have their homes impacted and sit there through potentially lost loved ones, illness, retirement, just becoming a senior? They can't sit there and have their property impacted and wait to be, you know, for remuneration and just sit there with that hanging over them. That can't happen. You know, Caltrans did that for years. They used to take little old ladies out of their homes and they'd take their homes. And finally, it became such an aghast in California that, you know, that was stopped and they started treating people better. They paid them for their homes and they gave them monetary compensation quicker. And the only place I know that actually beat Caltrans is Pasadena. They fought 50 years, and they stopped the freeway. 50 years. It took them 50 years. I love that neighborhood. I visit it once in a while. It's a great neighborhood. Anyway, my concern would be that you're going to do what you're going to do, and we can say, you know, no project, we can do that. We can do a lot of things as a council. We're going to stand behind our residents one way or the other. But I do think that it would be a good idea to have a letter sent that isn't asked. You asked us for the ask, so here's the ask. From my point of view, you deal with the impacts. So you've got to deal with the sound. You've got to deal with, to mediate the impacts to the school and the sound and these people's homes, if it's a tunnel, then that's what you got to do. But you've got to do it. And you got to make sure these people are protected and that they know what they're getting and they know what the impacts are and they know it's funded and they know it's secure and they know you can't come back and take it away so that they can stand behind what they're going to get. Or we can't stand behind you. So it has to be a lock. We need to work out the remuneration. We need to work out the impacts. And it's a pretty small section. I mean, you come up at 8 miles. We're going through a lot of our open space, too, by the way. It's our open space. It belongs to that. It's theirs. And you've got to do what it takes. If you're so good at what you do, engineering-wise, you can figure it out. Answered everybody's stuff there tonight. Sure, yes. you figure it out. That's the ask. Otherwise, I got to stand with Councilman Keller and just say no. So, and we are saying
no.
The point is, this community doesn't want it. And the only thing we can do, besides just say no, which will not necessarily help anyone, is to tell you, whatever you're going to do, you're going to have to make them happy with a secure project. And that's the best as I can describe it.
I guess for myself, I think that the cements problem is, I think of Whitaker, Vermont, Ellsworth Canyon, and as a council, we've never put our eggs in one basket, because you just never know based on litigation, legislation, you just never know how things are going to come out. So we've always taken a position on our big issues of having multiple tracks. It's a good analogy with the trains, but we always make sure that we have multiple strategies on any given issue that affects our community. And I look to issues that we've had in the past with Cross Valley Connector, where back in the early 90s, early 80s, Caltrans wanted to pay for it at $110 million. We ended up building the exact same road for $260 million. So this is one of those things where voters have made a decision to state where they put money towards having high speed rail. My concern is that we're just a flat out no in opposition. We're no longer a voice at the table. And I know as a city council member, when people come at us with just a no, not trying to affect mitigation of the EIR, generally the project goes through, it happens, and your voice is never heard of the mitigation. So I guess my thing would be to include in the letter everything Member Tim said, everything Councilmember West and McLean said, and ask for the mitigation for the community when it comes to sound, vibration, the tunneling issue. Based on Mr. Albright saying we have new CEO leadership, new board leadership is trying to work within the community, put their feet to the fire. But I also think there should be that separate track up front and not waiting for a good result, that should be working with Mr. Hogan, Ms. Perrin, Mr. Nillette, Mr. Backer, Crane, and Ferdman, where we are looking at what are the litigation and or other options if the board and or CEO doesn't take the community's request for mitigation seriously. So my position would be, you have two tracks always running at one time. And if their board and or CEO is looking and saying, you know what, we heard you, we're looking at a $500 million option where we're going to tunnel, that's significant. Because at the end of the day, the litigation for this to be successful, it's going to be significant, and or what is the success at the end of the day versus every community that's seeing an impact and they see benefiting them from LAX all the way up to San Francisco. So if you're one small voice in the big picture of a state issue, I think it's to our benefit trying to mitigate as best we can based on Mr. Albright's request, but also, once again, being right there along with Mr. Lett and Mr. Hogan, seeing how we can have a second track and a second option ready to go. Good.
If I may, I might be more inclined to go along with what you're saying, Frank. If this issue got back to the voters of California with an honest assessment of what it's going to cost, because I guarantee you this 38 million wasn't very accurate, and I will submit to you, nor is 68 million very accurate. It's going to go a lot higher. And an honest assessment, if the people of California have this come before them again and they say, you bet, we want this high-speed rail, then we'll sit down and talk more about the mitigation and doing whatever's necessary to make this more palatable for our citizens. But right now, this is a fraud on every member of the state.
Prop 1A and or if they are going to find the money and they're going to spend it and they're going to find a way to make Pat Brown's legacy was the I-5 and highway systems. Jerry Brown's legacy is this, if he's going to find the money, then I want to find the $500 million to tunnel underneath if this thing's going to happen. So I guess my position would be is if this is going to be the money pit and they're going to drive the money in, then let's get this tunnel and mitigate the impact here. And if they're just going to ignore us, the request that the Strawberry House has to make, then we need to take this honestly with a CMATS or another. And I did state that to two people that called me over the week. They said, look, this is not normal. This is Santa Clarita. Do your homework and I'll wear a CMATS. This community is tenacious and they don't take little lightly act order and non-response lightly. Please look at your history of Elsmere and CMATS before. And I think they came here tonight maybe doing that saying, we have a new CEO, let's look at the tunneling option. So I would just ask the council maybe look to that request, but also Mr. Hogan and Mr. Nolette along the way.
I think we should work with the group that you mentioned there. And I think Bob, if the initiative gets back on ballot and it dies, we have nothing to worry about. We thought it's good. And I hope that happens, but if that doesn't happen, I want to do everything I can to protect this community. And if we can get response back from you gentlemen, and your board can work to mitigate and to make these people whole, and that option of the tunnel mitigates and makes the community comfortable, then it would seem that would be a responsible thing for us to do. And alleviate community's fears either way. If that comes back that we're ignored and the board doesn't work with Santa Clarita, rest assured Santa Clarita will fight.
Is there a time frame that you think you can commit to as to if we write our ask letter and so that these folks know once and for all whether you're going to work with us or not? Did you have any idea? Any of you?
Well, I haven't been involved, obviously, in the conversations that you all have had the last few weeks or the last few days with Chairman Ford, Dan Richard. But I think he's, by virtue of those conversations and his commitment, I don't think you'll have to wait very long. Yep.
Thank you.
Hey, if we get the high-speed tunnel, does that mean the metro gets tunneled also?
We're not sure. I think what he stated, the metro, from what I heard, is a tunnel through New Hall Pass that's currently there.
Will it be 102 miles an hour then? Two metro trains going by?
I'm not sure Metrolink has looked at that, when they're going to be able, based on what I've seen him saying, they haven't looked at what track, why were they going to be able to share under tunnels versus separate, correct?
Mr. Sepulveda can tell you basically what the speed would be. I would assume going past a couple of schools, it's not going to be more than 110 miles per hour.
Do we can safely assume that the existing Metrolink right of way, we are not going to go 110 miles an hour? Our study has proven that, and it's just not going to make it.
Well, that's the right of way, even if it's double tracked.
Because it's double tracked. Yeah, it's not going to go 110 miles an hour. We cannot get that kind of speed out of the right of way. We can't get much more speed at all out of the right of way.
Can I just ask you one question? Regarding the Antelope Valley study, in the memo that we received, it stated that one of the options would basically get rid of our largest Metrolink station.
Sorry.
I think that was in, I know, exactly. That was in one of the memos, that one of the options.
There was a, I know what you're talking about. There was a tunnel option. One of the tunnel options to save time was to cut the corner at the Horseshoe Curve in Santa Clarita, which would require moving the Santa Clarita station. And I didn't take it as very seriously, serious at the time. I think the Santa Clarita station was a very valuable station for the system. That's one of the things. The idea of the study was to explore all the options and figure out what to move forward with, or at least have a baseline to start.
Okay, City Manager, what the council is looking for is a strongly worded stated that the concern of the voters' concern regarding $38 billion project versus going to $98 billion to $68 billion, and the funding issue were to go back to the voters. Also, all mitigations that were brought up this evening need to be addressed, and I don't know if you want me to address those or if you want to go back. You have it. And also, I want to specifically say that, I mean, I would put in there our tenacity when it comes to issues such as CMEX and Ellesmere, and that we consistently look at multiple options, and we look forward to working with them and their Mr. Albright's assurance that they would work on some mitigation. However, we'll always continue to look at other options along with the SCB HSR task force. Is there anything else, Kelsey, you want to add?
And to look at a technology that you don't have to worry about vibration, you don't have to worry about noise, you don't have to worry about it. Well, hey, it's out there, it's in the world, they're using it. We may as well put it in there and tell them to use it too. I know it's not going to happen, but you may have been
using it. Yeah, I'm going to work for a customer.
Frank, I think that maybe the learning would be a parallel.